Welcome to Morph Into a New You, part of MHNRnetwork.com. Your host, Johnny Calloway, is the author of several books, including Taming the Dragon, Dragons to Butterflies, The Metamorphosis of a Man, and The Bridge. He will be having conversations with people from all walks of life. Healing really is an inside job that transforms you to become a better version of you. We must change our self-talk and inner dialogue so we can start to believe. A special thanks to our sponsor, Meaningful Expressions, at m-expressions.com. They can take a concept, thought, or personal brand and turn it into a visual masterpiece that you can use to raise awareness about your passion or cause. They've certainly done that with our podcast website. And thank you for joining Johnny as you morph into a new you.
Hello, everybody. I'm Johnny Calloway, host of Morph Into a New You, where change a thought, you can change a life. The theme of the month is finding your voice. And this month, we're speaking with Dr. Eric Gentry, a world-renowned psychologist in the field of post-traumatic stress disorder. We're talking with Valerie Wojciechowicz, peer program manager at CAN Community Health. We're talking with Joanne Brennan, author of How to Thaw Your Frozen Feet, and author Aura Nadrich, author of the Says Who book. Incredible bunch of people we're going to have on this month. Tonight, we have Valerie Wojciechowicz, peer program manager at CAN Community Health. And tonight, we're going to talk mainly about facing stigma. We're going to talk about what it is, how it shuts us down, how it affects us, what we can do about it, and how it benefits us when we do. Hello, Valerie. How are you?
Hi, Johnny. I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Good.
I'm excited about our show tonight. I'm excited about the topic. So, Valerie, tell us what the definition of stigma actually is and how it's affected your life.
You know, we talk about stigma a lot in regard to lots of different things, but I think that most people think of it in a broad term. But the actual definition is a mark of disgrace associated with a particular circumstance, quality, or person. A mark of disgrace. Synonyms: shame, disgrace, dishonor, ignominy, humiliation, bad reputation.
Wow. The truth is, I've dealt with my own stigmas, but I never heard that definition. And yet it makes so much sense. It fits. It really fits. Valerie, tell us how stigma has affected your life.
Well, stigma's affected my life in a lot of ways. One of them is I've been in recovery for a long time, and so there's a stigma to being an alcoholic or an addict. I've been living with HIV for 31 years, so there's a huge stigma associated with living with HIV. There's a judgment, and one of the things that I came across when I'm looking at the definition of stigma is that it's socially discrediting. And so I have some overlapping stigmas there, and when you think about stigma, many of us do. I've got HIV and I'm a recovering alcoholic. They're overlapping stigmas, and I could also throw in there that I'm a woman.
And so I'm going to relate with identifying my own stigmas. I'm bipolar, and that comes with a huge stigma. No more or less, maybe less to some degree, but I can't imagine why. Then HIV. I'm also a drug addict and an alcoholic. And the thing is, you hear, for me, the biggest part is when I hear the little murmurs and the side talk of like, it just drives me crazy still when I hear somebody say, oh, he's bipolar. Because most people, I don't think, know I'm bipolar. Mm. So when I say, oh, yeah, and me too, they're like, what? Because they have all these ideas about bipolar that really don't fit.
Exactly. And the same thing for me. What I do at CAN Community Health is I run a peer program, which is a mentoring program for people living with HIV. So I basically teach people with HIV how to mentor other people and navigate life living with HIV, which is complicated. And when I tell people what I do, the first thing they say is, you don't look like it. And I don't. If there was a look, it's 2017, there's no longer a look. But since people assume that I don't have it, they just go on their merry way making judgments and statements and telling jokes and all sorts of things. So I endure that as well.
Well, there's so many commonalities there because I don't think, quote unquote, that I look bipolar. I don't think I act bipolar based on what society as a whole knows about bipolar. Because my experience has been what society knows about bipolar is the bipolar that does not take their meds, the bipolar that does not do their work. And so when they think about bipolar, they think about the person that's always very erratic. And I think the part of the cause of that is that functioning bipolars, the ones that are taking their meds, the ones that are doing their other work, are so terrified of the stigmas that are attached to bipolar that they don't let people know they're even bipolar. Right. So society doesn't even know that functioning bipolar is an actual thing.
And it's the same with HIV, well, really an addiction. With HIV, I work in a clinic, and I would say a very high percentage of our clients do not want to be seen walking into that clinic. Some of them still come in with hoodies and big glasses, and they certainly don't know, want anyone to know that they're living with HIV.
I make it such a point, and just about next week, actually, starting classes at the Salvation Army about bipolar and addiction and how to function with the two. And I really hesitate to say this because I absolutely love the 12-step programs, and I've been a member for 33 years. But the thing is, the stigmas of being bipolar or having any mental health issue is big in there. It can be, quote-unquote, as we say in the rooms, an outside issue. But it's also a big part of my addiction. I believe today that a big part of my becoming an addict was my trying to self-medicate my mental health issue. And fortunately, in the beginning, it worked. I've said 1,000 times in 12-step meetings, prior to my first drunk, my head was like a radio stuck between two stations. And when I drank, it dialed into one station. I had no idea I was talking about dealing with my mental health. So I'm sure there's a lot of linkage there for that with what you face as well.
Well, and for me, fortunately, I was sober when I got diagnosed, or I don't think I would still be alive. A lot of my clients just can't come to terms with living with HIV. And most of that is stigma related and how the stigma affects us. But also, there are different kinds of stigma. So there's stigma from society that says we're bad people, we're dirty, we're all sorts of things. And so then I hear that. And many people who are stigmatized hear that and create an internal stigma. So now internally, I feel unworthy, unlovable. I feel like all of those things that the people out there say that I'm supposed to be. So there's the external stigmas and the internal stigmas that really lead to a big problem. And dealing with the internal stigmas is what keeps a lot of my clients drinking and drugging.
Wow. So I can only imagine, through what I've watched and what I've learned, it's really not imagining. I pretty much know this, that with your situation, for instance, there has got to be trauma attached to initially being diagnosed.
Absolutely. And there's a guy named Tez Anderson who's been doing a lot of work with long-term survivors with HIV. What we've learned is that a lot of us suffer from PTSD. So when I got diagnosed, I had to deal with the fact that I had HIV. They told me I had no more than 18 months to live, so I had to deal with the fact that I was going to die. I watched all my friends die around me. They basically told me that it was hopeless. There were no medications. And then the medications came out, and I had to deal with the side effects were debilitating with the early medications. Somewhere along the way, I figured out that I wasn't going to die. I had no long-term plans, no education. I mean, there was no point because in my 20s, I had 18 months to live. So what was the point in doing any of that? So now I'm going to live. It's been 31 years and everything is good, but I had to figure out, how am I going to make a living? What am I going to do with my life? And for a lot of people living with HIV, they're on disability. And so it's like, okay, well, I'm almost healthy enough to work, but I have to deal with my disability and I'm put in this box. And that's also stigmatizing. That's another layer of stigma. And so everything that I've been through in the last 30 years, yeah, I'm definitely dealing with PTSD, but I never figured that out until Tez put two and two together for me.
Wow. So I know there's, with your situation, your position, it can, if there's a statistic for this, I know that you know it, but how many people do you think, if there's not a statistic, get diagnosed, get traumatized, and then become an addict or an alcoholic?
Absolutely. I don't know a statistic on that, but acquiring an addiction and staying stuck in addiction are real common.
For someone after
being diagnosed.
Even
absolutely.
If they weren't prior to.
Right. And so then throw, even if they weren't prior to dealing with mental health issues, throw some of those in because there's certainly depression, sometimes long-term, sometimes situational. And there's things that happen in the course of a day. I had a guy tell me that AIDS is God's way of weeding out the population. So what do you think that does to someone? When we're trying to date and we get rejected, what do you think that does to someone? When people scream obscenities at us because, you know, just because we have HIV, what do you think that does to someone? So certainly it creates addictions. Trying to deal with it, it creates mental health issues and all sorts of other things that play in there because of the stigma.
So let's talk for a minute about how the stigma shuts people down and what being shut down alone, whether it's about HIV or bipolar or addiction, what's shutting down and not speaking about what's going on, how does that affect us?
So in HIV and mental health and anything else medical, it leads to poor adherence. And by adherence, I mean following up with your doctor's appointments, taking your medication, getting blood work done. It certainly manifests in poor adherence to medical care.
I know for myself, when I was told you're bipolar, what I heard was you're broken.
Yeah.
And what went with being broken was you can't be fixed. There is no fix for this. And fortunately, I've always been vocal. And I'm like, I refuse to accept that as my answer. But I know so many people that I have tried to help since I come out the other side to a great degree anyway. So many have accepted that there's no hope.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I encountered with my bipolar was my clinical depression. It became a huge part of it. And depression in and of itself is the epitome of hopelessness. So when you feel hopeless and you're being told you're hopeless, it just magnifies it and makes it that much more difficult to find the slightest ray of hope. So for you in particular, in your story, where did you start finding hope and acquiring the strength to be able to say, hey, I'm not accepting this for my reality?
It was after I got fired from a job because of my HIV status. I got divorced because of my HIV status. And I had that guy tell me AIDS is God's way of weeding out the population. And he followed that statement up with, those people deserve to die. Now, the most common route of transmission for HIV is sex, condomless sex. And so when he says those people, it's like, well, what people? You know, kind of we all have sex. And that is how far that kind of judgment goes. And he made me so mad. I mean, I was that kind of mad where you can't scream, you can't cry, you can't, like, my insides were bundled up and I just felt like I was going to explode. And he's the guy that made me decide that I'm going to learn everything I can about HIV and I'm going to change the world.
I'm going to tag on to that with that bundled upness, I'm going to call it, that you're talking about. The bundled upness. Dr. Eric Gentry calls it jacked upness.
Right.
And the thing is, you were fortunate enough, you found the strength within yourself to speak, to say something, to do something. Think for just a moment. I'm talking to you listeners. Think for just a moment. What happens to the person that's got all that bundled upness and the jacked up stuff going on and they can't speak? That has a physical effect on your body. That anxiety gets built up and you shut down and you do indeed start to believe that you are hopeless.
Well, some of what ties into that for me, actually a lot of it, and it's not just HIV, but I'm going to talk about it with HIV and bipolar in particular, the language that we use. And even in the medical profession, the language that we use helps perpetuate the stigma and beat us down. So when we're talking about someone who's bipolar, he's crazy. When we're talking, you know, we use the words nuts and crazy. The weather was back and forth. So we go, oh, the weather's bipolar. Well, so what
kind? I haven't heard that one.
What kind? I have a few more. You know, what kind of message does that give? So bipolar is bad. Is the message. And with regard to HIV, you know, one day I just could no longer say the word infected. Think about this for a second. If I said to you, I have to go and take my mom to the hospital for that infection, what do you picture? You picture something big and oozy, something horrible. Well, and we routinely say HIV infection when it's just as easy to say HIV or living with HIV. But instead, those stigmatizing words get laid on top and it's subliminal. You know, most people don't go, ew, I don't like the way that word feels, but it continues to beat us down. And I think that happens with a lot of things because, like you said, people don't know the folks that are challenged with bipolar. People don't know the good stories. They just know the bad stories. The same thing with HIV. They think of it in a bad way because they've never been educated to look at it in a good way.
Right. And I know I was expecting you to come up with this since you brought up the bipolar, but just recently I stopped saying mental illness. And I mean, very recently, like last week. And even I, being one that's diagnosed with bipolar, a mental health issue, I never thought of it myself as like, okay, it's a mental illness. I just kind of went with that. But once, I'll go ahead and say it, you pointed it out to me that that was something that I needed to think about. I did. And I'm like, wow, you know what? It makes sense. Now it's my mental health issue. And it does open up a softer place to fall.
Right.
Or I don't even like fall. I'm going to say softer place to land. Because, you know, illness says you're sick. And one of my biggest issues with what people approach bipolar with me when they don't know I'm bipolar is that we're broken. And it's like it's irreversible. And I don't think I will ever not be bipolar, but I know already that I function in a way that most people wouldn't guess that I'm bipolar.
Right. Well, and then there's also a component called people first language. So you put the person before the diagnosis. When you just say, well, I'm bipolar, it's like you're saying, I am bipolar. You are not bipolar. You're living with bipolar. Like, I am not HIV. I'm living with HIV. And it makes a huge difference if you think about it. Every time I take my medications, if there is something negative attached to that, I'm going to think that and feel that every time I take my medications. So if we tell someone they've got mental illness, every time they take their medications, I'm sick, I'm sick, I'm sick. And then what happens?
Yeah, you buy into it.
And then they're sick.
And hearing you say that, I'm kind of chuckling to myself because I reached a point, I've been in the 12-step rooms since 1984, and I reached a point where I will no longer say I am an alcoholic or I am an addict because that is something that's with me. It's not what I am. Because whatever in my mind, whatever I say after I say I am really goes deep. So what I've just learned in this show is I have bipolar. Yeah, I have bipolar. Bipolar is not what I am. It does not define me.
Right. Or how about living with?
Yeah.
You know, because living with is a more positive way to look at it. I'm living with HIV. I'm not HIV. I do have HIV, but I'm living and I'm living well. And so that's the message I continue to give myself every time I say that.
I love when I do these shows and I get to learn. You know, it's so nice for me, just part of who and where I am today is that I can be open to, like, even though I'm the host of the show, I'm also the student in the show. And it's really cool when I get to speak to such powerful people that have such information that can help us all. And I then get to use it. So tell us the benefit once you started speaking. And I'm not just talking. Let me be real clear. When I say have a voice, find your voice, any of that stuff about your voice, I'm not saying that you need to have your own radio show. I'm not saying that you need to be a public speaker. I'm not saying that you need to do any of that. For every individual, there's their own way of being able to speak. And I'm not, and it doesn't necessarily have to be speaking, but to be heard in some way. There are ways, but it is very important, even if you only talk to one person, to be able to not bind it up.
And that's true. And, you know, there are a lot of ways to take a stand against stigma. There are a lot of things that we can do. And speaking up is one of them. And maybe it's not, if you're living with HIV, maybe it's not about HIV. I'm not gay, but when somebody bashes the LGBT community, I'm right there to defend that community because that's not okay. And if someone is bashing the LGBT community, then they're probably bashing alcoholics or people dealing with mental health issues or people living with HIV. So speaking up is a really good way. And it doesn't have to be with disclosing whatever's going on, but it's a great way to point out to them that, you know, hey, maybe this is something that you would benefit from thinking about a little bit. The important thing there, though, is to be gentle. Like, you might be passionate about it and screaming in someone's face is going to be counterproductive, but it will help and you'll feel more empowered. And I don't really think anyone should do, like, right now, find their voice and do what I do, which is speaking publicly and things like that. But it will help you be more confident. maybe speak out online. If you're dealing with mental health issues, maybe, I don't know, post some education about mental health, again, without disclosing. But that way, you're empowered, you're helping other people, and it really matters. Write it. Write a journal. Journaling about things just gets them out, believe it or not. If you have a close friend or a confidant that you can talk to, that really helps. I mean, again, just getting it out. When all this stuff stays inside our heads, I always picture it like a blender. And it just, you know, just comes out. It doesn't come out. And then when you've got someone to voice it to me, it's like a salad shooter, spinning around in there, but it keeps spitting out. And so it doesn't occupy my entire life. And I learned that the hard way. I spent a really long time never talking about my status, not saying a word. I told a couple people, but that was it. I actually used to take the label off my medication bottles and put it through a shredder. Now, who on earth is going through my recycling bin to look for the medications that I'm taking and figuring out why? It's just that the stigma did that to me. It made me crazy. And after a long time of living like that, I knew that I had to do something different. So I found a program that was going to help me speak out. And I started going to schools and treatment centers, talking about living with HIV and, you know, what that's like. And I found some power in that. It was also really scary. I mean, I cried a lot. It was very, very scary. But it was all part of my healing process. And now I tell the kids, yeah, you guys are like group therapy for me, because they'll ask me questions that I've never thought about. You know, middle schoolers routinely ask me, if you could give it back, would you? I never thought about that. So I get to grow and learn and find my own voice when people ask me questions and do things like that.
I love all of that. And of course, you know, it resonated with me when you were talking about writing it down. I write everything down. I'll write everything down. And I get to have my voice on this show. I get to say what I think and feel. Sometimes I disagree with my guests. It's been a pleasure tonight with Valerie. We agreed on all of it. But I just did a show with Dr. Eric Gentry that speaks directly to this. One of the quotes that he quoted from something he read, and it says, bring forth that which is in you, and that which is in you will save you. Fail to bring forth that which is in you, and that which is in you will destroy you. We hear a lot in the 12-step rooms about we're only sick as our secrets. And those things that we keep in us that we really want to say and we can't, in my mind, they can become cancerous, literally. And they can, as this quote just said, they can destroy us. So it is vital to me, if I just write it down, whether I ever share what I wrote with anybody or not, but somehow for me, I have to get it out of me. And I'm blessed that I get to do it the ways I get to do it in my writings, my blogs, my podcasts. I'm very blessed that I deal with the stigmas. I've had to face the stigmas. But at some point, like Valerie was saying, I got pissed off and said, you don't get to shut me down anymore. You just don't get to shut me down. And I also get a lot of, I just wrote this in one of my blogs. It is so incredible for me. It's when I feel like my soul is the most alive when I'm speaking at a meeting. And then after the meeting, and sometimes even during the meeting, somebody will go, yeah, me too. I know that. I did that. And it's like my whole chest opens up when that happens. And I just feel like, yes, I do have a reason for being here.
You know, you just made me think of something. So I recently heard a quote that makes so much sense to me. It is, if you share your story, you take your power back. Because think about it. For me, I lived in fear because I was afraid somebody would find out. And then I was afraid they would tell other people. If I tell people and I tell all the people, then their power is gone. I can't be afraid of someone telling my business if I tell it first. And my experience has been that I've gotten a lot of acceptance, even from people who I didn't think would accept me or my status. And again, I'm not saying that I think everyone listening should run out there and tell their deepest, darkest secrets and open their closet and let everything out. But it's just something to think about, you know, that the thing that terrified me was actually what set me free.
Right. It's amazing how that works. It's really amazing how that works. As I said, I just feel blessed that I get to do the things I get to do with the people that I get to do it with. And please, if you're listening, take some part of this. Talk to a friend. Talk to somebody that you can say what you need to say. You can go to my website, johnnycalloway.com. I believe now that it's after the first year, down in the lower right side, you'll find a chat tab and you'll be able to leave a message, post a question, do whatever, and I'll get back with you. And Valerie, how can anybody get in touch with you? How can they reach you in social media or?
In social media, they could reach me on Facebook, although that would be kind of complicated because my last name is 13 letters. If you're on Facebook, I'm a friend of Johnny's. You could go to Johnny's Facebook page and find me. My name is Valerie Wojciechowicz. That's my hesitation. Or if you call CAN Community Health, my clinic is located in Sarasota, but it's just a main 800 number, and tell them that you're looking for Valerie Wojciechowicz, they will find me.
Thank you. So everybody, please stay tuned for the rest of the month as we find our voices and as we talk to some really powerful people. Joanne Brennan, author of How to Thaw Your Frozen Feet, her whole process is about how to get out of abusive relationships. Life coach Ora Nadrich, her book Says Who is a 7-question process of how to change the way you think so you can change your life. Soon, in the next couple of months, I will be doing workshops on Morph Into a New You, how you change your thoughts to become a whole new person. Keep posted, keep listening, and I hope you've enjoyed this. And I want to throw a shout out for Mental Health News Radio Network and Kristen Samantha Walker for providing a platform for us to speak on. Thank you all so much. Okay, everybody, thanks for listening. Remember, never give up. Always keep it real and take time to smell the roses. And please sit down and watch a butterfly. Keep up with all that we are doing by going to morphintoanewyou.com. Thank you very much.